Anyway, hi everyone. Welcome to Taz Talk, the show where we talk about the Adventure Zone podcast. Today we're talking about episode 9 of Amnesty Arc.
We are gonna dish the goss. I don't know what you were gonna say after that, but I've been waiting all this time just to say dish the goss. Because I think that's gonna be my new favorite thing to say.
It's pretty good.
It's so
good. I was just gonna say that it's hot and I've got a fan running, so I apologize for the white noise.
Oh, I don't hear anything.
Okay. Well, that's good.
Yeah.
So, I felt like there was something that I remembered to say later and didn't write in my notes, and I can't remember what it was, but whatever. Okay. Yeah. I remember what it was. This episode felt more like a lunar interlude than any previous episode.
I was thinking too. Part of me was like, oh, we didn't get any fighting this go-around. But it is... Because it's not something that, you know, it's not between the arcs, I think we should just come to expect there are going to be more, like, chill kind of episodes moving forward.
I think I'm okay with that.
Yeah, that's fine.
I mean, again, this is something that we've talked about, but I love combat when I'm playing, but listening to fighting is not always the most attention-grabbing thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's kind of good.
This episode definitely felt more... narrative, which is fine, it's great, because even and I'm jumping like to the end, but I commented to myself, oh man, it's cute that they ended with like this nice flavor text, like it builds their character, it strengthens their relationship to each other, it builds the narrative that we're making for them and their lives in this town. And then of course it's not just that. Griffin cuts to that those people in the jail of someone recognizing Ned, and I was like, I can never just expect something to be face value for the Adventure Zone. Everything is always something else.
Well, I mean, we know that Ned has a shady past, so this is probably just the way to introduce some of
that. Yeah, now it's shady with the British guy.
I loved that Saturday Night Dead segment. I thought it was so cute. I loved the music, and Clint plays that role super well. It's very fun. I like it a lot.
There were so many new songs for you to enjoy.
Yeah, there were.
Yeah. Well, but yeah, you're right. Clint does really he does do a very good job with hamming it up with Ned.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That was exactly the phrase I was thinking. Okay, so basically, yeah, they got some new items, and I wanted to talk about that because the mechanic going forward that Griffin kind of invented is that Heathcliff will request some items. And then they just have to, like, find them while they're going about their adventure, like, as a side quest thing, which just, I like that idea a whole lot, mostly because I think that the way the boys are running this adventure, it's very narrative heavy, and, like, sometimes I forget that they're playing a game, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but I keep forgetting that, like, oh, they're playing a game called Monster of the Week, and I think this kind of, like... three-item thing will help gamify the adventure more.
Yeah.
I
was wondering if they were going to bring back an item introductory sort of mechanic, and I think this was a really excellent way for Griffin to mitigate, well, how, you're right, like, how can I gamify this exchange of me giving them new things to play with? Not only to make it maybe a little bit more challenging, but also to help them influence whatever the outcome is. Like, them needing to satisfy Heathcliff's request is so cool. Now it gives them, like, an objective, like, a side objective. Like, this is totally a video game. Like, it's playing out like a video game. It's really, really, it's really neat to listen to it. Just because you can see how Griffin is, like, putting in all of his... video game and narrative know-how, because video games essentially are interactive narratives that especially ones that you can influence the outcome of. So to see Griffin kind of establishing the rules in his game universe similar to video games, like we talk a little bit about how maybe the Adventure Zone drew us to it because it was somewhat familiar, because we were somewhat familiar with D&D. Having these elements of, like, hey, that would be true for a video game. Like, having that also be familiar is kind of also, like, it's the same sort of appealing feeling that rhymes. and I think that's why I appreciate it, is because I'm like, I know what you're doing. You're making it fun.
Yeah.
And I like that.
I like it too. I'm super psyched for them to have magic items because, honestly, the heavy realism in this arc, I like it, but it's a little boring, if I'm being, like, super honest. And I think that magic items will add some of the, like, unpredictability of encounters that we've been missing.
To be fair,
it reminds me...
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead. Finish your thought.
Well, I was just going to say, you remember in the TTAZZ when they were talking about... They were basically addressing concerns from listeners about, like, are we still going to have those kinds of moments where... the, like, arms outstretched or Geralt appearing or those kinds of, like, spellcasting curveballs. And, hang on, there's a siren going by. I don't know if you can hear it over the recording.
Yeah. This is free talk. Now we get to free talk.
I forgot where I left off, so I can't cut any of this out. That's the funny thing.
I should have done something more, like the poker app or something. Damn it. I squandered my chance.
Oh, God. What was I talking about?
I got
about?
Very distracted with the siren.
God damn it. hang on. I'm trying to remember. Oh, so basically, I think the magic items will be... I think part of the reason why those moments happened in Balance is because... everybody has a bunch of skills at their disposal, and the DM, it's impossible for the DM to keep in mind all the time all the spells and all the magic items that all the characters have. So Griffin would constantly be surprised by the things that people were doing, and I think in this world, for the most part, Duck and Aubrey and Ned are just like normal people, and they do have some special powers, but they're very, they're like constrained, and they're... it's not like a whole array of spells. It's just like a magic sword, and sometimes I get talked to by a person, or like I can do fire magic. And I think once Griffin starts giving them a bunch of magic items, it's gonna like quickly add it up to sort of this, basically like, what am I trying to say here?
I think you've got a point. If the boys get more magic items, it gives them more things to play with, and the more things they play with, the more chances they have for like spontaneous magical shenanigans, or just spontaneous shenanigans in general, because you're right, like Griffin can't really keep track of everything that his players have at their disposal 100% of the time.
I was just going to say that the more magic items and like the more gear and abilities that they have, the less Griffin can predict and prepare for.
Yeah.
And that's the thing is I think so far these characters have been easy to plan around because they don't have like so many tools at their disposal. They're for the most part pretty normal people compared to Trace Horny Boys. But as soon as we start like equipping them, I think it's going to get more... I think it's going to get a little crazy. You know what I mean? Yeah.
At first I was going to say, well, you know, but all of those crazy shenanigans in the Adventure Zone, most none of them, that's a terrible phrase. Basically, like, they all happened because of skills that the magic wielders already had innately. Like, Griffin didn't do anything to make those things happen. It's just the McElroy patented creativity made them, like, mess with Griffin's game a little bit. So... I think that's something that this narrative would it would be more helpful to kind of create those events, like you're saying, like if they had something somewhat magical to help propel the narrative into something a little bit more wacky, because the patented McElroy creativity, it's gonna help them get into these situations. It's gonna help them problem solve anyway. Like their creative solutions to the water monster being in the hot spring and Ned like throwing in a towel and then like losing his nerve and running away
hilarious.
And a chair too. Like those crazy funny shenanigans, they still happen, but now that we have magical items, I think they are gonna just add more to what we've already established.
I just like I can't believe Duck has a jetpack now, and I think this whole time, like, there are a lot of things about Amnesty that I really like about the way that the boys are handling it and the kind of tone that they've set. And I've been trying to defend it and defend Griffin. But as soon as there's, like, a hint of something more silly, I realize, like, oh, my God, yes, this is what we've been missing. Give Duck a fucking jetpack. Like, let's make this crazy. Let's do this.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I really appreciated it. Yeah. The Fly Master and the Narf Blaster, I think, were great
such
additions.
A good name.
Yeah. Just that whole, and I think that whole, just that sequence of them goofing off and being silly, that's what I missed. Like, it for the first time this entire arc, it felt like the old Adventure Zone. And I don't mean that in a bad way or a good way. I'm just saying, like, we haven't had that level of goofiness in a while.
Yeah. I thought it was so funny when when Duck was saying something to Beacon, and then Justin paused waiting for Beacon to respond, having, like, forgotten that he plays Beacon also.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of forget, like, that's something where, because Griffin has been the DM for so long, it feels very natural when he's, like, talking to himself, like having a conversation with two people and it's both of him, but it always sounds so weird to me when Duck and Beacon are talking.
Yeah.
And so apparently it feels weird for Justin too still if he's like doing that kind of making that kind of mistake. So that's kind of funny. I enjoyed that very much. So I want to fast forward a little. Yeah. Unless, do you want to talk about the ministers at all?
I would if I could remember more of, like, what their names were, or... And that's not, like, I'm not knocking Griffin. It's just, remember how in Commitment, Clint would introduce, like, five new characters?
I remember.
So this is similar to that, where there's just a lot all at once. And as a listener, I just have a hard time, like, keeping up. So maybe after we interface with them a couple more times, I have a better...
I think that makes sense.
I'll have a better idea and a better opinion. But, like, the most I can really kind of grasp at is that there are some people, sometimes I think they sit on big chairs or have podiums. One of them is a translator who speaks for the crystal or something. And
That was weird, like teenage girl or something.
Yeah, like they held up that whole meeting to wait for her, and then she showed up, and then she walked away.
Yeah.
And she's sleepy all the time, which I think is kind of adorable.
It's kind of adorable.
But they held a lot of weight on this interaction that didn't really do anything.
I did write down some things.
Oh, yeah.
It is the Ministers of the Arcane... Mm-hmm. Minister of the Arcane, Minister of Preservation, and Minister of Defense.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I couldn't quite figure out what the difference was between preservation and defense, but I'm sure that will become more clear as we move forward.
I have a feeling that Minister of Defense is you treat or you interface with the things that are coming in, like actively coming in, while the Minister...
Yeah, that might be true.
Yeah, Minister of... What is it? Provision? Nope.
Preservation.
You're actively trying to preserve.
Minister Provision.
You're actively trying to preserve things that are already there because they were mentioning, and this is something I wanted to bring up. Aubrey really wanted to touch that stone, which do you feel like Griffin was kind of leading Travis?
I super was going to ask you the same question in like 2 seconds.
When that happened, I wasn't really expecting it to happen. And that's the thing about Aubrey is that. It's fun to see her, like, just react to things.
Yes, so, I love her very much.
On one hand, I'm like, Griffin really heavily implied, you have a lot of Sylvan energy, which means, like, what does that mean? Is that normal for Sylvan people? Is that normal for anyone in general? That opened up a can of worms. So for her to want to, like, grab that crystal, did Griffin pass them by the crystal because... like, according to the map, that's where they were going to go? Or did he point it out...
I think...
because he wanted something to happen and Aubrey... like, he wanted Aubrey to react to it, like...
I think he was trying to goad Travis into going for it. And I don't think it was, like, it didn't work and he was disappointed. I think it was, like, just something that he considered might happen. I think it was maybe, like, a branching path that he planned. That was the impression I got.
Yeah.
Because it felt very much like things that I have planned in campaigns that I run. Like... that sort of like, oh, there's a thing here. Do you want to do this? You know?
Yeah.
And sometimes, even if you plan for it to go either way, you're disappointed when it doesn't go one way. But
between now and the end of all this, Aubrey's going to touch that stone.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's no question in my mind.
Well, because so that's the thing about these Sylvan folks is they need to have interface with the crystal to, like, replenish their wares, so to say. So, like, the folks who are in the human world planet, it's weird to me when they refer to the other place as the other planet and, like, Earthlings. Because I'm like, are they on a different
planet? Yeah, that's so weird.
Or, like, what is this?
It gives it a weird sci-fi spin to it.
Yeah, like, I think...
Oh, and I also wonder... Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, for us to not know if we're in a different dimension or a different planar system or a different planet, I think it's kind of disorienting. So, especially if they're all like worldly, earthly animals, like they're all furries and ghosts over there, so it seems pretty earthly to me. I can't tell.
Yeah, I kind of like it. I mean, this is an interesting thing. Yeah, it is disorienting, and this is an interesting like sci-fi versus fantasy thing where I think in a lot of fantasy there's a lot of like alternate world sort of like you go through the closet and now you're in Narnia, that kind of thing. And in that case, it's never explored like within a like sci-fi context. It's always just like another realm within the bounds of Earth. So to have that sort of Narnia-esque place, but continue to refer to it as like a separate planet, I think is a really cool, weird idea, because it's like, oh, are you actually traveling through a wormhole to a literal other galaxy? Like, what's going on here? I think that's super interesting. Okay,
this is gonna maybe come from left field, but did you ever watch like Xena Warrior Princess?
I did, but it was so long ago, I really don't remember
well. You know how that show like felt, right? Like they're in a human world and sometimes they like work with mythical things, and it's mythical things, but it's kind of understood that they're on Earth, but it's just Earth with like fantasy in it.
Yeah, so like an alternate Earth. That's like
that's the kind of vibe that I get here, is that they're basically on Earth because all of these things are earthly in nature, even though the architecture of the buildings is a little bit not Whovian, but basically Whovian. Like, it's different, but it's still Earth. So, and I think that's why calling it a different planet and calling them Earthlings, where I'm like, well, you're on Earth too, you know, sort of a thing. we haven't really been fed anything other, like, we've been fed fantasy things, but it doesn't feel, like, otherworldly. It doesn't feel alien. Because
it doesn't.
Yeah, and this is also coming from the other side of left field. This is coming from right field. But in Face Off, when you're trying to come up with a character that is specifically non-human,
I don't think I've ever played that game.
Oh no, it's a TV show. It's a reality TV show with special effects artists.
That was the card game where you like fought What's that card game that you guys all like?
Oh, I don't know. I don't. Yu-Gi-Oh. But I bring up Face Off because if you're trying to like they often have to make up these characters and they have to sell the idea that this actor is not human. So in like to convince someone that something is not human, like you.
Okay, I know what you're talking about. That's the special effects makeup.
The trick,
that shit's so cool.
It is so cool. I love that show. Apparently, it's getting canceled. I don't know. But the trick that the judges always like tell the contestants is you have to alter what people come to rely on as human features. Like if you're gonna make a fish person, you have to eliminate the nose, you have to introduce gills, you have to like move the eyes to make it, you know, different and like specialized to their environment. So I think that's the kind of thing that stuck with me from the show, is if you're trying to convince someone this isn't human, you have to remove the human elements and add more like otherworldly elements.
So for
the creatures in Sylvain to be described as humanoid animals or humans but ghosts or humans but with fangs, all of that is telling me they're on Earth, but like fantasy Earth. So, and it's fine if that's what it is, but it's just
I think that's probably what it is. I think when they say earthling and planet and stuff, I my guess is that they're not trying to like blur the line between sci-fi and fantasy, and they're not trying to bring in this whole like sci-fi element. I hope they are, because I love when people blur the line between sci-fi and fantasy. I'm looking at you, Dragon Riders of Pern, I don't know if we need to read too much into that. It might just be like the phraseology they're using.
Exactly. I think it's just they need a language to grasp onto to say these people are other. And the language that they've grasped onto is otherworldly, but it's kind of interstellar otherworldly than like a different.
Well, another
like it's cosmic in nature.
Yeah, here's my crack theory. Another way to explain how similar things are to Earth is like, even if these are technically two separate planets separated by a great distance, if they've been connected the way they're connected now for like all of time, they probably would have shared a lot of genetic material or whatever essence.
And that's why everyone's humanoid, like,
so like if these two, but it just, you know, go out on a limb here and say these are actually two separate planets, but they've been connected in this way for all this time, then I think it would make sense that they share a lot of the same features.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, they speak the same language and all, and
That's true.
we've seen that Sylvain is like relying on the Pine Guard. Actually, yeah. Do we see that they rely? Like, what are they getting from the Pine Guard?
Well, they're Oh, I think it's because the Pine Guard keeps the existence of Sylvain a secret, so humans don't try to come into Sylvain and destroy them.
Okay.
That's why the Pine Guard is important, and that's why they're like deferent to the members of the Pine
Guard. Okay, fair enough. But then, what are we getting from Sylvain? I'm speaking as a human.
I don't know. Fuck yeah, humans. No, I don't know. That's a good question.
I guess entertainment.
Are we getting anything?
I think
it's like a peacekeeping thing on both sides. Like, we don't want to end up in a weird war here.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Unless maybe this is a question that exploring Mama's backstory will answer.
Yeah, maybe. Like, I guess in what we know of the universe is that there are just these two different places that are separated by an arcway, and because they exist and because danger things come from both sides to each of the different
danger
realms
things.
Yeah, like, well, you got the bombs coming in from Sylvain, and then you have the random humans coming in from human land.
Yep.
Like,
yeah,
these two houses are kind of they fucks with each other, and you know, like, their relationship is to say, hey, you better stay on that side of your line.
That's true. I don't know. It's pretty interesting.
It is interesting.
I also want to say that, like, there are plenty of examples of straight sci-fi where the aliens are humans with pointed ears or funny noses or different colored skin. Like, that, just because the... I mean, again, we're probably reading way too much into this.
Oh, yeah, no. This,
the fact
my comment,
that the Sylvain...
my comment was only supposed to be, like, a minute, and I think it, like, expanded itself. Because I'm trying to like put into words this feeling that I have about this arc and about the world that we're building, and I think that's part of it, is that I don't know what to make of Sylvain. Like, I don't know if they're supposed to be alien or supposed to be high fantasy, or if I'm supposed to just be like, it's a wacky world of, you know what it is? They feel like Halloween Town. I don't know. Like, this is it's a great Disney Channel original movie. If you've never seen
that's
it.
A weird. I haven't. Oh, you don't mean Halloween Town, like the Nightmare Before Christmas.
Yeah, maybe you could do that way too. Like when Jack goes to Christmas
Town. I don't know what the Halloween Town.
Halloween
movie
Town,
is.
The movie is these regular kids board a bus, and then the bus takes them to Halloween Town, where it's Halloween all the time, and where it's just like it's the same planet, but it's a different dimension. But you can also do it like Jack going to Christmas Town, where it's. It's the same world.
Weird.
Yeah, it's the same world, but you're just walking into a different tree.
This is a weird tangent, but the cosmology of Nightmare Before Christmas is really weird, and it makes me feel weird. I think in maybe the same way that Amnesty is making you feel weird about, like, there's like, we're in like a liminal space.
Yeah.
Like, some things are not well defined, and it is like discomforting, which I think is really interesting.
Yeah. I don't need my boundaries, but I like to play with them and learn more about them is all. Yeah, you know, I'm gonna just put this out there, but I still consider Heathcliff to be Totoro.
That's so funny. That's such a... I super imagine him as a big cat.
I mean, Totoro's
really
a kind
like
of
the
cat.
Idea.
Sort of.
That's true. I really like the idea of imagining him like Totoro. All right, I think that's about everything I have to say about this episode.
I have just small things. Aubrey.
Go for it.
Aubrey, it seems like Aubrey's character is going to be more like the Avatar, in that there are multiple elements that she's going to eventually be able to...
Yeah, I thought I had that same thought.
She's the Avatar, which is cool. I think that's really neat. Like, if we get to see her develop this relationship with this mentor, maybe it'll turn out that maybe this mentor is like... her great aunt or something.
I'm really curious about Aubrey's whole situation.
Yeah, we've set up a whole lot of great mysteries that I look forward to.
And I'm really curious about everyone's... Fuck, there's something I forgot to talk about. Okay, sorry, we're not done with the episode yet. Well, it's related to the discussion of, like, separate planes or planets or whatever, but I wanted to bring up the fact that Heathcliff did not recognize Beacon's magical energy as being from Sylvain.
What the hell
so
is
wherever
that?
Beacon and Minerva are from, that's a totally different thing, apparently, which I find super interesting.
Yeah. Which now I'm very thrown off, because I'm like, what? What is this third magical thing I have to now keep track of?
Yeah, I'm super... I really like that. And I'm having trouble articulating why I like it so much, but it's something about this idea of having, like, like kitchen sink fantasy where it's like, well, if we got one thing going on, why not make a bunch of weird shit going on? And so it's like, yeah, if there's one weird magical world, just fucking make a bunch of them, whatever. Yeah. Like, no things limits. Are coming from all directions. I love that. So, yeah, I'm psyched for
Excellent.
Can't wait to get more Minerva. Oh, man.
Yeah, we haven't. And where's Dr. Bonkers? It's just, we have all these side characters. I just want to know that they're okay.
I know. I feel bad. I wonder if Travis feels bad about Dr. Bonkers' lack of screen time. But I think the problem is that, like, I think we probably talked about this too, but rabbits are not the most mobile creatures.
No. I expected Aubrey to have, like, a backpack that Dr. Bonkers would just kind of chill on. Or, like, Pikachu style. Like, Dr. Bonkers would just be, like, perched on the shoulder.
That would be so cute. I mean, I think the problem is, like, remember that episode where, like, they established that, like, oh, I found out carrots are actually not good, like, rabbit food. They're, like, a good treat for rabbits. Like, rabbits also don't really like being picked up. They don't like, they like get stressed out really easily. They're actually really difficult to manage pets. Yeah. So I can kind of imagine maybe they don't want to have a bunch of like
people on their
problematic
ass.
Treatment of a rabbit, or it would be like a fantasy rabbit where it would just turn into like a very unrealistic animal, I guess. I don't know. So yeah, maybe they realize like, oh, rabbit's not the best thing. Or maybe this would have happened with any animal. It might be hard to like fit in animal companion in this kind of thing. That's probably why like Griffin didn't want Magnus to have a dog, and that's why like Travis never remembered to like check up on Steven.
And that's this I was just about to say, like, Travis can never have an animal companion. It's just he can't not able to. Sorry
Dr. Bonkers got boarded at Amnesty and now he just chills there, I guess.
Yeah, basically.
All right, I think that is for real this time.
Yeah.
All I had to say about this episode.
Basically, Vincent is the Bill Weasley of the Adventure Zone, is what I wrote down. But I don't even know, first of all.
Oh my God.
I don't even know if that's all of the right names that I meant to say. Who's the dad? Who's the dad of the Weasleys in Harry Potter? It's not Bill. Bill is
was
the
it
brother.
Bill? No, Bill is the brother.
So then who's the dad?
Molly Weasley and.
Doesn't it start with a B?
I fucking can't remember, and it's making me really upset. How could you do this to me, Chelsea?
But no, it's just he likes DVDs. I think that's adorable. I think it's adorable.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
I think it's adorable when,
what
like,
the
other...
What fuck is his name?
I feel like when otherworldly beings look at human culture, and they're like, that's cute. I'm gonna be a fan of that. That's, like, my jam. I love that.
Well, I wonder if this is just a callback to the joke from a couple episodes ago where, like, they would make pop culture references and Vincent would be like, oh, yeah, I like that one show, which I loved. I thought that was so funny.
I think it's my headcanon now that the reason why he knows so much about Friends is that Mama was like, I'm going to be gone for a little bit. So here's the entire box set, just 8 seasons just to, like, tide you over until I come back. So, like,
canon. It's canon.
He's just got a really neat little TV and DVD player.
That's adorable.
Yep.
Just your regular local friendly goat man.
Yep. Well, that being said, though, like, even though they're opposed to having humans, like, up in their shit on Sylvain, they're not opposed to, like, certain things about human culture, like entertainment and DVDs.
Yeah.
And I can't tell if that's meant to be jokey or if that's, like, straight up how the culture is supposed to be, but okay.
Well, I don't know. Like, the DVDs aren't dangerous.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, humans are.
Where can people find us, Rachel?
Well, if you would like to get in contact with us, you can send us an email at taztalkpodcast@gmail.com, or you can reach us on at taztalk.tumblr.com, and you can send us an ask there.
Cool. Or you can find us on Twitter. We are at taztalkpodcast, or... You can come see us in San Francisco, because that's where we'll be next week. Is that next week or the week after?
Jesus, is that next week? Oh my God, no, it's the week after. I was going to say, I'm not ready, Chelsea. I need to replace some tires and change my air filters in my car. All right. We will talk to you guys in another 2 weeks.
Yay.
Thanks for listening. Bye, everyone.
Bye.